the amount of traffic and the sheer eyes that you get from just doing an arc there is just, it's like unsurmountable. You can't even, there's no way, even if I was in Chelsea, I would be able to get that exposure, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, totally exhausting. But I feel like those are my moments. I love them. I like love how busy it is and how time flies and all the people you get to meet and new collectors you may have contacted. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's great. I love doing it. So I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
This is The Conversation. It's episode 203 with Mrs. Gallery. They are in Queens, New York, and they are Sarah Maria Salamone and Tyler Lafreniere, who run the gallery. Sarah does most of the work, the day-to-day, but Tyler is definitely a partner and very much involved as well. I am Michael Shaw. The website for this podcast is theconversationpod.com. where you can go and check out images of the gallery itself, its facade in Maspeth, the neighborhood in Queens, along with several install shots, work by gallery artists, as well as a couple of shots of one of their booths at NADA from last spring, as well as the couple themselves. And you can also support the show there and get links to social media and so on and so forth. If I were to sum up this episode, I would say, this is an inquiry into how does a young gallery rise up and thrive in a ever-changing, challenging art market? And I think we get a lot of answers to that question. So among other things about running a gallery that I have not asked before, including sales, so stay tuned for that. On the back end, I'm going to tell you about a few things. I want to talk to you about a guy named Patrick, who is a listener and supporter in Pittsburgh. Offered to custom design some t-shirts to raise a little funds for the podcast. And I want to tell you about the idea he had, which I think is pretty funny, and offer you the opportunity to suggest some ideas that you might have. Stay tuned for that on the back end. Also going to tell you, in case you don't already know, but even if you do, maybe a little bit more about the art world's own sexual harassment scandal. And another art-related scandal, which is the breaking story about the Sacklers, the philanthropists and wealthy family behind OxyContin. And there are two articles that came out, breaking articles about that, which I will tell you about as well. So stay tuned for all of that on the back end. In the meantime, let's get into the conversation with Sarah and Tyler and Mrs. Gallery. Stay tuned for the back end for more. Thanks for being here. Are you guys at the gallery now, or are you at home?
We are at the gallery.
You
right
are at
now.
The gallery.
We're actually open. So we have a note on the door, and we locked the door. We're
okay.
Like, knock if you want to come in.
Right.
And then one of us will go and be like, be quiet.
Yeah.
But you can look at the art. It's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think that's a great compromise, because you're taking me to a week and a half ago. I was in a particular part of town, Hollywood, which is far from where I am, and I had never checked out this artist-run gallery, and it was fairly close to where I was going for this appointment, and so I went over there, and they had a sign, handwritten paper on the door that said, back in 30 minutes, and that's just like, that's a death knell for artist-run spaces from my perspective. Like, if you're not going to have somebody be there when you show up, what are the chances that I'm going to go back again?
True. It's very true. Usually I leave my phone number if I have to run and get a coffee or something.
Right.
But I mean, I'm always 5 minutes away. I'm never gone for that long.
Yeah. 30 minutes is where you got to draw the line, right?
Oh, I mean, I think, well, you never know when people are going to show up. And it's true. We have our sales associate, Ryan, has owned shops and has lived in New York City her entire life. And she is one of those people who's like, I'll never go back.
Yeah. Is it the three of you then, Ryan and you and Tyler?
So it's primarily me, and then Tyler is here on Saturdays, and he makes all the heavy decisions with me. But all day-to-day operations are pretty much on my end. And then Ryan, we asked to come in on Fridays because we wanted to be open the extra day so that we're open 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So she helps us do sales, and she comes to the art fairs with us, and she has a background in art and in sales and in art sales. So, and she's also a close friend of ours. So we, you know, it was a good fit, and it's a really low amount of pressure on her end because she's only has to be here 1 day a week. So,
right.
And then everything else she can kind of do freelance on the side when she wants to. So
That sounds like a great arrangement. But I will point out that, because I was having a conversation with somebody about this in a different context, but it was a woman who started a business, and she invited a friend to kind of come on board, and he wasn't pulling his weight, and it, you know, it kind of strained the friendship.
Sure.
I imagine, though, I mean, based on what you said, that it wasn't a risk for you. You had sort of a full understanding of what was involved and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, no, we have a great working relationship, and there's a constant check-in, and I always make sure that I don't feel like I'm pressuring her to do too much either. We keep it pretty loose, and the expectation is that she's here on Fridays and she can do as many sales as she is possibly able to do, and is excited to be going to the art fairs to work on those with us. And so it's been, and we've both been doing this for a long time, so we know when things can sometimes go unexpectedly when you're working with friends. So we're luckily we're on a very solid ground with working with Ryan, and you know, that's been great. She's no partner in the business. She's the person who helps out and comes in when we need a hand, and she's very good at that, and we're really thankful that we have her on board.
Yeah. Well, I do want to talk about sales actually at one point, but before we get there, I wanted to make reference to the fact that you said you've been doing this a long time, and I'd be interested in deconstructing that, just because you're still pretty young from what I gather. And so when you say a long time, you're talking about like 9-10 years, that kind of thing?
Long in my side of life. Yeah.
Sure. Well, I was also going to say maybe working in an art gallery or running an art gallery or partially running an art gallery is like dog years. And, it, you know, 10 years feels like 30 to normal people.
Sometimes 1 year feels like 10 years to be totally honest, you know?
Yeah.
I've had that experience as well. So yeah, I mean, it does feel, and New York is a city which will beat you up on a regular basis if you're careful or not, you know? It does, sometimes it feels really like it's a lot of hard work. And so, yeah, things can, so yeah, 10 years does feel like a long time.
Yeah.
But it feels good. I'm still doing it, so I must be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're running your own gallery, and I'm sure that makes all the difference. But let's, before we maybe get into the, we'll work our way into the finer points of you being beaten up and beating up others and so on. But tell us about Mrs. How did that name originate?
That's actually pretty funny. Tyler and I we've always casually talked about possibly running a space or a project or doing some kind of zine or, I mean, a number of iterations over the years that we've been together. And when we kind of found our location in Memphis, we were deciding we needed to call something, and I kept coming up with names that he hated, and then he would just tell me that we'd come and figure it out sometime. And
wait a second. Did Tyler come up with any names himself?
Yeah. I mean, I had a few and she hated those.
Okay. Okay.
It was a back and forth of, hey, how about this? I like it. No, I hate it.
Okay. All right. So that's good that Tyler gets to speak for himself. So you both equally were rejecting each other's suggestions.
Yeah. And we also did this in naming a child once before, you know, so we feel like we had some practice.
What is your child's name?
Her name's Zuzu.
Zuzu?
Yes.
That is awesome. Okay, now how many names did you think, would you say you went through before you came to Zuzu?
Oh, man. I feel like we cast around, you know, 4 or 5. I couldn't even tell you what they were anymore because it's just such a fitting name for her that now I have so much attachment to it.
Yeah.
We were toying with, it started sort of as a joke with friends when we sort of, before she was born, we for some reason for a moment thought she might be a boy. And we were toying with the name Danger as an actual first name, which again started as like a total joke. And then we're like, hey, we kind of like the way that sounds despite the, you know, overt craziness of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that actually materialized into her middle name.
It's true.
Right.
So she's Zuzu Danger.
Wow. Yep. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, great. So Sarah, let's get back to Mrs. then.
Sure. So when we were trying to name it, I think we were at a work party of Tyler's, and at this place that's, it's not the roof, but it's the upper floor, and there is roof access. And I can't even tell you the name of the bar, but they've had their parties there in the past. And we don't generally know anybody, so we were by ourselves and we were looking out at the Empire State Building and kind of just going back and forth with names. And I mean, we both had shot out plenty of names that we both hated along the period of trying to figure out Mrs. But I think I just kind of was thinking about Queens and that we were in a already kind of gendered neighborhood of Queens or a borough. And I just like the idea that Mrs. is short and it's title. I don't know if you call it a prefix, but, and I also like that it was feminine, but at the same time, you know, Mrs. is always somebody's mom when you were young, you're growing up and you always had Mrs. Kennedy or Mrs. somebody, you know, or your teachers at school. But so it marked some kind of authority almost as well. Mm. I enjoyed that. And something that we both decided a long time ago was we didn't want to name anything after our personal last names. Mm-hmm. We just didn't have an attachment to it like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of nice to go completely against that instead of naming it our last names just as the beginning title.
Right.
But I said it out loud to Tyler. I said, what about Mrs.? He's like, do you like it? So we did it. We went ahead and we looked to see if we could get an LLC under the name Mrs. And we could. And we bought the web domain and that's what happened. So it's, Mrs.
Nice.
Gallery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like most about it that it's really short and sweet, you know, and I think that helps, I would imagine. I guess I also wonder ultimately if it doesn't matter that much what the name is. I mean, I think I did have a conversation with a gallerist about, I believe it was another gallerist who didn't use their name in the gallery title, and that was kind of going against the grain. But other than the fact that, you know, you're not getting your name out there per se with your gallery, it probably doesn't really matter that much as long as people can remember it. Would you agree?
Sure. Yeah, I guess I think you're completely right in that regard, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it also just gives us some anonymity. You know, it doesn't label it as run by two people. You know, I hope what it does is put the focus on our artists and not who's behind the curtain.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's most important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the gallery is in Maspeth, which is a neighborhood in Queens, as you alluded to. And it's a part of Queens that's relatively close to Brooklyn. Isn't Greenpoint the closest section of Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's close to Greenpoint and East Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also bordered by Ridgewood, I guess partially Bushwick slightly, a little bit too. Ridgewood, Queens is the other, and then on the other side it's close to Sunnyside and Jackson Heights. So, but yeah, in Brooklyn, the closest neighborhood's pretty much Greenpoint and Bushwick and East Williamsburg. And
right.
we live in Greenpoint, which is why Maspeth was kind of a location that wasn't going to be an issue for us.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And we're the only space out here that's dealing in contemporary art other than the Knockdown Center, which it's a great facility that's down the road from us. Mm-hmm. We're happy to you know, be the two kind of cultural landscapes and mass fest at this point.
So. Right. And what is, to go back to sort of the beginning of our conversation, what is your traffic like generally?
We have walk-ins on a daily basis. Now that we have started our second year of programming, we've had even more traffic than we have last year.
Mm-hmm.
Our busiest days are Saturdays. I think that people get off of work and have the chance to make it out to Queens. We are totally away from the train also, so we don't make it easy for people to get here, though it isn't that far to come. And I think lots of people have realized that as they come out to Mass Fest to make a visit out to us.
But
we, you know, we've had people here all day already today, and you know, that's why we have to put the sign on the door so that
on Tuesday
people know we are here.
You've already had a lot of people on Tuesday. That's a good sign.
Yeah, we've already had visitors, which we were happy to talk to. Yeah.
So yeah.
It's great.
And is it the kind of situation, and you're the kind of size of gallery where when somebody comes in, you will maybe talk to them? What are the different ways? I mean, I guess I'm trying to ask, what percentage of visitors when you're there would you say that you engage in some kind of conversation with?
I would say I engage with at least 100%.
That's a lot.
And maybe, well, I at least at the very least they say hi and let them know that someone is available.
Yeah.
Offer them, you know, to ask me any questions if they wanted to. And I kind of will gauge from there if they are someone who wants to talk to me or would like to just be left alone and have their own thoughts. And so sometimes I'll let people take a look around, and then my office is also in sort of part of the gallery. So when you come to the back part of the gallery, I'm like kind of sitting there, and usually people will choose to engage at that point and ask a question, which is nice. And I do end up talking to everybody who does come in. The amount of conversation definitely varies from guest to guest, but yeah, I feel like I talk to people all day long, which is great. It feels good that I can connect them with the art in a little bit deeper way than I think sometimes you get to when you're going to a gallery.
Yeah. You know, I feel like there are far too few galleries like that out here from my experience. My experience tends to be with the one and two person gallery sitting situations. Particularly one I can think of that I went to that same day that I went to the gallery that was closed. Like this one I went to also in Hollywood, there was two people in the office, and one, you know, I said hi, one of them said hi, and then they just kind of kept on doing what they were doing. And that's always been the case at that particular gallery. And there are other galleries kind of where you don't get a lot, let's say. And
right.
And as you're describing what you do, I bring all that up to say, I wonder what makes certain galleries think they can afford to be so uninviting for their business.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. And I mean, I've sure worked at other galleries where, you know, you're expected to be polite, but you don't necessarily need to engage. And I know that's sort of a style of some, and I would say probably a lot of galleries in Chelsea and even the Lower East Side. But I don't know. This is my space for the first time. So
yeah.
I feel very connected to who comes into the space because it is, you know, it's not huge. It's pretty small. And, you know, you can hear me when I move. So it kind of, it almost feels...
Yeah.
Weird if I didn't engage. I don't know. I might be just a bit friendlier, but I do try and let people take their time to look at the art as well. I don't want to bombard them with conversation.
Right.
That's just the way that we do things in Mass Fest. And it's, you know, it's, if you ever get to come out here, I'm sure you'd understand just the way that the gallery is set up. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty open. So, but we're always happy to talk. No matter if it's myself or Tyler here or Ryan on Fridays. So we're always happy to talk to you about the work, because why not engage? We're here.
Are you,
that's our job.
Are you visible where you're sitting?
No, I'm actually, we're like kind of in the back behind one of the walls.
Okay. That's actually, I think that's actually good. Because when you're in the space looking at the work and it's a small space and just one person who's run, you know, hosting the gallery is there, it makes you a little self-conscious.
Well, yeah, it makes you a little self-conscious, and it's also like that person's on display all the time.
Right.
I don't need to come to work and have people just stare at me all day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
I don't that doesn't need to be part of my life, but yeah, no, it feels good then because also it doesn't distract from the work at all too. So you just get a clear view of the artwork when you walk into the gallery. So I think the gallery looks nice. And I like where I sit, so everything works out good on our end. So hopefully it works well for the people who visit us.
I was also thinking that the way that you're inviting in a nice, welcoming, but not, you know, overly welcoming way is fitting for the fact that people have, for the most part, invested to go there because you are off
the
beaten path.
Sure, absolutely. And we understand that. I think that it's good that people want to come all this way to see art. That makes me happy to know that we're showing art that people are interested in. You know, I want our artists to get the most visibility as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like because we're a bit of a destination, maybe people are also willing to talk more and ask questions because they have made that trek, however short or long it is. You know, they might be more interested. So maybe it's a two-way street there between the destination and then us being more invited and then the people who are coming in for visits. So I have no doubt, but it's been working out good.
And I want to congratulate you without getting too gushy on your recent write-up in The New Yorker. So The New Yorker does. And this is in the print edition too, not just online. So in the print edition, for people who are not New Yorker readers, there's a art section in the front of the magazine that has maybe in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 different short write-ups. You know, sometimes it's all museums, sometimes it's mostly galleries. And so there was you and another gallery in Queens. So I guess the writer took the opportunity to do 2 in 1. But I mean, I don't ever remember seeing Queens represented for a gallery in that magazine.
Well, I don't. Well, then, thank you. And I should thank Will Heinrich was the person who wrote that wonderful review, so beautifully written, of Genesis Bellinger's exhibition that is currently still up for another 2 weeks. But he was wonderful, and we're really thankful because he's really invested in her work and has written a few times about her, and so we're very pleased. We're really happy, and Genesis definitely deserved that write up for sure. We're happy for her.
And another reason that I wanted to bring that up is because I wanted to see what kind of bump you may have gotten, if any, if you noticed the bump after it came out.
You know, I can't say that it has been really any necessary traffic change because we had before that article came out, we also had an article come out in Art Forum. So since the two of them came out, they kind of came out a week between each other. Mm. I think we've had a lot more collector bumps. People who have been reaching out, but traffic wise, I think we've had a consistent amount of traffic since we opened the exhibition, and it's definitely gotten more hits on our website, if you mean that way. We've done considerably well with sales, I think we've gotten some bump from the whole exhibition. I do think that the press was definitely helpful.
Yeah.
In kind of the longevity of how much attention we've gotten, because we do have longer exhibitions. So this has already been up for 6 weeks and still has another 2 to go. And people are still coming out and excited about it. So, I'm sure it had some impact. Yes, absolutely. I don't want to discount that it didn't. But I guess that answers some of the question. Maybe I didn't, but
no, you. I think you did. And one of the thing that you said that I'm most interested in is something that I've talked about on the show before, which is the write-up and who that's for and how that affects things and so on. Like, especially say if somebody gets a bad review, you know, is all press good press? One gallerist here in Los Angeles said that the reviews are just for the artist, you know, that it's all about just sort of massaging their ego. So it might be any one of those things. Obviously, it really kind of depends. But in your case, it clearly sounds like, and this is something very noteworthy, which is that once the collectors see this, you know, you talk about museum validation, there's also press validation. So when the New York, when the Art Forum and when the New Yorker review positively, you know, a show, the collectors are on board, apparently, is that's what it sounds like. Maybe none of them would admit to that, but you sort of, there was an implication that there was a cause and effect there based on what you described.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the only issue that our collectors had was that we've already sold out most of the exhibition, so there was very limited at that point once mm-hmm. the press had come out for them to obtain at that point, which I feel bad for them, but you know, we'll work on that in the future.
it's a good problem to have.
It's a perfect problem to have.
Yeah.
And we're happy to have it. But yeah. And I mean, I do think that press validation puts us in a different light, because we are brand new and we've really been open for legitimately a year. You know, people are now turning to Queens and saying, oh, there is a gallery there. And yeah, and the other gallery that was mentioned, in the New Yorker was, it's Sarah Mayohas, and I've always said it wrong. Sarah Mayohas, and the gallery is called Mayohas, and it's an apartment gallery,
mm-hmm.
Which she's been showing really excellent work in, and she deserves that write-up for sure as well. And you know, kudos to her and Eva O'Leary for sure. But that's another fun alternative space, which is great that both us and Sarah are getting write-ups in the New Yorker. Where, you know, that's wonderful. It's great to see that happen.
So this show you mentioned is up for about 8 weeks, right?
Yes.
And is that going to be the length of shows for pretty much the rest of the season?
Yeah. Yeah. We do 5 exhibitions in our brick and mortar space in MazFest a year. And that's what we did last year as well. And that's what we'll continue to do our following year. It actually slows things down a little bit in a nice way,
mm-hmm.
not just for us, but for our artists as well. They're mostly 8 weeks. Some have to be 7 weeks just based on the calendar. It's easier for us to have 2 weeks between exhibitions for deinstall and installation because we are such a small team that, it takes us a little bit longer to do things because we don't have the staff or the capacity to move as fast as we would like to. But I think that it's really functioned well for us in our last year of programming, and we are happy that we're able to continue to do it. And it's only gotten good feedback. And I think some galleries have actually thought about their 6-week programming or even 4-week programming and decided that they would maybe try and do something a little bit longer. It just causes less stress overall, honestly. And
mm-hmm.
it also really gives the opportunity for our artists work to be seen by almost everybody who can see it. Of course, there are people who won't be able to get into town, but that extra 2 weeks, I think, really does make a difference.
So it's
8 weeks around, give or take, and then 5 shows a season. And we're closed in August because everybody deserves a break.
And because that's very much the trend in New York that, you know, if you did stay open, nobody would come anyway, virtually. You know, in a sense.
True. And I used to think that was silly when I first started working in New York, and now I am fully 100% on board with it.
Yeah. So now that you have, right. So being that you have 5 shows, as opposed to some galleries that have more like 8 or 9 or or 10. When you have that smaller number of shows per year, I mean, I'm going to sort of preface this by saying I don't imagine that your overhead is particularly big, so this may not be that much of an issue. But if you have five shows and you, let's say, have, if you were to have eight shows, you would have half or maybe two-thirds of them be strong sellers, and then the others would be more experimental. You know, do you use that same kind of ratio, or, you know what I mean? Or do you not even think so much about, you know, we need to have four of our five shows be strong sellers and one can be more unmarketable or less marketable?
So that's a great question, for sure. I don't think that we are at the position in our infancy to really be thinking about what is going to be a big seller or a blockbuster hit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's both Tyler and I, coming from art backgrounds ourselves, really do focus on the work itself. And if it sells, that's fantastic. And we are very happy for our artists, for all that we can make them. And of course we do push on that, and we do want to do sales because we do want to keep running our space and we want our artists to succeed. But that's the most important side to us. We haven't really, maybe in the future we will have to consider doing that more so. But right now we just really do focus on programming and the strengths that we can pull from our curatorial work that Tyler and I do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and that, you know, that being solo shows or group shows. But right now we're just really focusing on the work itself and the artists that we want to work with. And we do choose them because we want to have a relationship, and we would like to be intertwined with their artwork, and we want to help promote what they do. So maybe some year we'll have to rethink our strategies, but if we're, you know, I think right now we're pretty settled in this, and it has been a good platform for us to work from, and I think we'll continue to do so.
Well, with this current show that we have described and you have described as doing really well, honestly, how much in your own mind did you suspect / hope, or whatever, however you want to put it, that you thought it was going to do really well?
On the market level, I had some suspicions that it would do well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that my expectations for it was that it would do so well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I just aimed lower, but
that's
not intentionally at all. I knew that Genesis Bellinger's work had been of interest, not just to myself, but many other people. And I have been following her work for a while, and I suspect other people have been doing the same, because she's extremely talented. And she's doing something really, really great. So I had some suspicions, but I had no idea that we would be doing so well with the exhibition, but I couldn't be more pleased, to be honest. And it's been great. I think it came down to, are we going to work well together? And is this a space that you want to show in? Because we're sold. So it really just was luck at this point, I think. And we both enjoyed working together. So that it really has been positive all around. But from a market standpoint, we just got lucky with this one.
Mm, okay. Well, I'd be curious to ask you about selling artwork, particularly because I don't think I've gotten very specific in that line of questioning with gallerists before, and maybe it would be particularly intriguing to do with an artist-run space.
Sure.
And by the way, to what extent, just for listeners to clarify, Tyler is making and showing work. You are an artist yourself, but my understanding is that you have sort of transferred your art making or your creative endeavors to running the gallery at this point. Is that more or less fair?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. I really haven't made any new work in the last year and a half, 2 years, which is not totally surprising. I generally will take breaks, and I've always worked curatorially, so it doesn't, and I really do enjoy working with other people as well, so it doesn't feel like a stray for me, really. But yeah, Tyler's still making work, and his studio is actually in the back of the gallery.
Oh yeah, yeah, you mentioned that. And so Tyler, so Tyler's got to jump on the phone now. It's funny because there's this gallery out here. It immediately brought to mind this gallery. And I didn't actually know this until after I'd have only visited it once, but there's an artist-run gallery here that's doing quite well, in which off of one of the spaces, one of the artists, two artists who co-run the gallery has their studio. And so I guess there was this sort of joking with somebody who I was talking about the space with. It's like at the opening, it's like, oh yeah, you want to come see my latest work? So to what extent, Tyler, is that, how do you navigate that convenience or that, you know, that geography?
Yeah. I mean, some of it is pure necessity, right? In that, like, you know, from a financial standpoint, we're not necessarily able to be running a gallery and having an apartment, you know, and having a secondary space for me to work. I've had one in the past, and, you know, it's rents for those things just get higher and higher, so it's more and more difficult to find adequate space.
Yeah.
And then there's a convenience, too, just in that, you know, I can come in and work in my studio and also take care of things that need to be done at the gallery, or, you know, participate if visitors come in or someone needs to stop by in off hours. But yeah, in terms of like how we manage that at, you know, especially openings, I'm sort of conscious of it. I mean, you know, I always try and clean up the space, et cetera, that kind of thing. But also, you know, I try to make sure that, you know, say I had a visit or something with someone previously, I wouldn't want to keep a bunch of pieces up on the walls as if they were being presented at the same time as we'd have an opening, because, you know, you kind of can see into my space and, you know, people overflow into that. So, you know, I'll have work around, but it usually looks much more like active studio work. You know, it's leaned against a wall. It's, you know, half put away, that sort of thing. Because I don't really want it to detract from what's going on at the opening.
Right.
I think that would just feel odd for both counts.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's good to hear. But I guess, what about getting more awareness out there about you and your work because of that proximity, would you say?
I mean, I'm sure that's true to a degree, because, you know, as I said, you can kind of see into my studio, so people will come by for openings, or I guess just as visitors as well, and, you know, some of my work is around them, and, you know, people ask, oh, well, this is your space, you know, what do you do? Oh, you do this. So it does probably foster some of those conversations, probably in a larger sense, you know, just being part of the gallery and being more involved in some of the, you know, conversations that happen around running a space and having people in. That probably gives me more visibility than even the proximity aspect.
Right, right. Okay. So the reason that I mentioned that you guys are artists is because, and I really don't even want to bother like getting into, are you an artist run space? Are you not? You know, because that's not really that interesting a question ultimately. But I do want to ask you about getting into running a gallery, coming from an artist background as opposed to, you know, somebody who went into art history and then, you know, studied at Sotheby's or, you know, and then started working at a gallery. You have been working at galleries, as you said, though, for a while.
Yeah.
I'm basically most interested in talking about how you sell stuff. But maybe as a way of introduction, how much selling were you doing in your work as a, you know, as a gallery associate director and so on leading up to Mrs.?
So I took like a kind of a typical path through the gallery, I guess, like ladder, or I don't really know how you would.
Sure.
I worked my way, you know, so I started as an intern, of course, and that was in 2008. But then I also, that was in New York. Previous to that, I worked at a gallery upstate, I mean, I mostly was just like an assistant there on the weekends, which was not doing any selling at all. So pretty much I didn't until about 2000 and probably about 2014 did I actually start working in sales mostly. Because I also did nonprofit for a while and worked doing that. So there were no sales at all, except for fundraising, which is difficult. And it actually, and it's, you know, I'm glad that there are nonprofits out there, but it did definitely detract from wanting to start my own nonprofit.
Yeah.
So I guess I've really only had about three and a half years of sales experience, which is probably not as much as I would like to have, but you know, the opportunity really wasn't available before then. And part of that was probably because I was focusing mostly on making art and not trying to sell it, you know, which was, you know, nice at the time. I didn't have to stress about it. But now I do a lot of selling art.
Yeah.
it's fine. You know, everything's going well. I guess you want to talk, you probably want to talk more about specifics though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Knowing you.
Well, I'm not going to try to deconstruct what you mean by that, but,
okay.
Yeah. Well, I did kind of try to preface it by saying I haven't really talked about it with people before, and you can always push back if you feel like, you know, it's too much interrogation, but I guess the first question maybe is how much were you trained kind of in an overt sort of way? Like, here are the five first commandments to sales, you know what I mean? And then maybe sort of through just more casual or off the record kind of conversations, you know, and so on. I mean, I know I'm kind of putting words in your mouth, but how would you describe sort of your introduction into selling work as far as it being something that was very consciously taught to you versus more, you know,
sure,
you just learn by doing?
Right. Well, I guess when I was in grad school for a while, I worked in Chelsea at a gallery mostly as their gallery manager and their gallery assistant. I was there mostly part-time for a number of years. And it was also a small operation. So there was an owner and a director, and then they had a registrar and then myself. And from time to time, I would actually end up being the registrar, and then I would go back to being just the gallery assistant. But because it was a small operation, I would have to help out with sales occasionally. And I wouldn't say I was very formally taught, but I mean, I was there for a number of years where it was very apparent the pattern in which you get the contact information, send them the tear sheets, you know, make sure that they understand that the discount is available for them. And we have these other five works. I mean, it was just kind of, I guess, gathered. It was just, you know, information was available to learn. So I guess I just absorbed that from working there. And, you know, and then after that, it kind of just common sense and going forward, just human decency. And just trying to figure out how, you know, just the best way to use what I had kind of absorbed from my time working at this one specific gallery and going forward from there. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say any of it was really formal, Ten Commandments type of training. I don't know if that's really what do you want to hear, but
we're just starting, so brace yourself. The things that you're describing are the tangible things, which I think are important, obviously, and it sounds like you learn them well, and you know, and you continue to execute those types of things well. But I guess so. What that the issue or the angle that raises is the intangible part of sales. So you mentioned that you with Mrs. have been doing art fairs, for example. You know, I would imagine that that's much more of an overt or at least a more pointedly sales oriented type of dynamic than when you're at the gallery. So I mean, maybe, and I don't have a specific question here, but maybe you could just talk about, other than being decent, you know, which is always good. I appreciate that in a gallerist. you know, how conscious you are of courting You know, that's, I think that maybe is a good word to use as far as new collectors and holding on to collectors and what have you, right?
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, we're doing art fairs. Right now we've done one art fair. We're going to be doing NADA Miami, which we're really looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing Elizabeth Atterbury with us. We did NADA New York with Omari Duglin, and in terms of building collectors and relationships, I think that NADA New York was a huge bonus in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, we did make a lot of connections, not just necessarily collectors, but also other artist-run spaces and galleries and gallerists from all over the world, which have been we've kept in good contact with them. And we're looking forward to seeing most of them in Miami. And I think that that's something that art fairs luckily bring to the table. I understand that they can be a giant and they are very expensive. But I do also see the benefits. And when you can do a fair like NADA, which does offer some lower priced point booths, just being able to show your artist's work on that international scale. I mean, even if it's still domestic in New York, it's bringing collectors from all over the world. It's a real bonus. And so that has been great. I do understand like the courting of collectors, and sure that we absolutely want to make sure that we keep our collectors and keep them happy. And that's something that Ryan and I have been working on for the last few months together, and hope that we do get to keep our collectors, and we like them a lot, so we hope they keep coming back. But you know, that's a relationship that you have to build as well, and it's not just because you want to, but you really do feel passionate about the work and you want to put it in a place where it's going to be as appreciated as you find it yourself. So I think that we take our sales very seriously, and mostly we do it for our artists. It's not really for us. We want to make sure that they are able to get what they need out of working with us. So,
mm-hmm. In terms of missing something. Yeah. Well, in terms of that's okay. We're working our way slowly forward. In terms of the dynamic in selling work, when you're at the gallery, you can look, you know, consider it both ways. You can consider it at the gallery or at the art fair, which I know you have limited experience with, but you know, how much is it you being there and being a good diplomat for the work? I mean, I imagine that's a huge chunk of that process, but how much of thinking, I guess, or how much have you evolved your strategy in being in those situations, particularly the art fair, in terms of doing well? I mean, I can't imagine that it's as simple as being a good diplomat and or you know, a good representative for the artist,
well,
for the work, right?
I mean, there's a lot of work involved.
Sure.
Like, I don't, you know, I work all the time, and Tyler will make fun of me that I won't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll joke at our daughter sometimes in the morning, say, oh, mom's not asleep. She's just on her phone, probably emailing someone.
Right.
She's like, yep, she is.
Right, right.
You know, and it's not just about being a good diplomat. Of course, you want to do some marketing, and I don't know how many people read press releases anymore, but we do take our time to try and write something that is concise and informative, and hopefully something maybe well-written for all of our artists, which I think is important. I think that there's also a high level of networking that goes into it. The art world's a really social place, and it helps if you are social yourself. And I that comes easy to me. I have no problem almost talking to anybody. So
mm-hmm.
That's great. That's nice. But I mean, I don't know. It's not easy. It's constant work, and it's constant follow up, and definitely following through and keeping a million lists and staying as organized as possible. But yeah, that's, I mean, it's a big job. and I can't do it myself. So that's Sarah, why I have help.
No, just to clarify, Sarah, I never even implicated that it was easy.
No, not for a second. It's just, no, I didn't think that you meant it in that way. I guess I'm trying to cover all of the things.
No, you did. Thank you.
So
Yeah, no, you did. I mean, I think the things that really stood out for me in your description were networking and being a really social person. I mean, that's like a huge, I would imagine, you know, not being a gallerist myself, but I would imagine that's like a huge portion of being successful at being a gallerist, you know, that you are.
I hope so. Let's see where we are in 10 years from now, you know?
Right. Yeah. 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 But also, as you know, as you described it, it's, and see, these are just the nuanced things that I hope don't sound too remedial to people listening,
but to people listening, at least.
Yeah, I hope so. But just the image of you being on your email, it's not just the time of being on email and sending emails. If people have to sort of read or imagine deeper into that and imagine, or at least I try to, and I think about reaching out to people, maintaining current relationships, and then doing repair work or, you know, problem management or, you know, troubleshooting or what have you, among other things, you know, that it's,
right.
And when you add those things up, you can see how, especially when you're doing a good job at networking, which means that you're building your network all the time, you can see how being on email in lieu of spending time with your daughter might happen.
Oh, well, she gets a lot of me too. So
I know.
Luckily, that's helped. That's because I work for myself. I'm luckily able to, sit down and write an email when I have to, but also it means that I can be at home more than I ever have been at any other gallery job. So it does work out well. But and all those things that we just discussed, you know, I didn't have anybody helping me on that last season, and which is why we've asked Ryan to come help, because I honestly can't be in two places at once half the time. So sometimes we do need an extra set of hands. Luckily, we do have that other person aside from myself and Tyler to kind of jump in. And, you know, if it's just a shipping problem or I'm unable to make it to the gallery and I've been working with the collector for 2 months on trying to get them together and I have to hand it off to her, I'm more than happy to. And it's a good thing to know that we have somebody that we can solidly rely on, because it is a lot of work, and I don't know if it's as nuanced as but maybe it is, and I'm just seeing it from the inside out instead of the outside in. But
just to give you a little context, I guess maybe I could have done this earlier, but just to give you a little context of where I'm coming from, I'm thinking about certain gallerists, and I'm sure plenty pop into your head, that just are just known for being really great at sales. And then you think about others that you can probably think of several as well that, I mean, from my perspective, not being very well connected, I only know of the galleries that have faded away, you know, that didn't survive. I don't necessarily know why. You know, you can make an assumption that it's because they weren't good enough at sales, but you don't, you know, unless you were really friends with that gallerist or sort of part of that scene, you don't necessarily know why it happened. But that's kind of why I was getting into those kinds of specifics, like what does it take? You know, and I know you said, see where I am in 10 years, but I just wanted, for a young artist turned gallerist, wanted to get a sense of what kinds of things you were doing. And it sounds like you're doing all the right things.
Maybe hopefully we are. Let's just keep knocking on wood and have our fingers crossed for,
that we
are.
Right.
Because it's really nice to work for yourself. It is.
Totally. And so when you go to NADA in a couple of months, is it going to be you and Ryan then? Is Tyler going to be there as well?
Yes, Tyler will be there as well. We're all coming down together, and we're lucky that Elizabeth Atterbury will also be able to come down, which is great. So she'll be able to come to the fair and help us arrange her works the way that she envisions. So
right.
Yeah, it's
right.
Gonna, so it'll be the whole team is coming down.
The whole Mrs. team.
The whole Mrs. team.
Okay, so yep. So Tyler, did you go to the last fair yourself and talk to us about what it's like for you being more of a behind the scenes kind of guy?
Yeah, I was at the last fair, NADA, in New York for, I think, almost the whole time. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day I couldn't make it over.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think the dynamic works out really well between us. Like Sarah sort of mentioned, she's a really social person.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can do that if you don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of go either way. I mean, I can be very outgoing and social, but I think I need more time away from people and kind of in my own head and in my own space.
Yeah.
So I think we are actually able to strike a really nice balance between, you know, her being able sometimes to be the really social one and me to be part of that when it's the right headspace for me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe augment or just like, you know, help. She kind of mentioned, you know, sometimes we have to send one person here and send someone else there. And I mean, we'll even do that. You know, we'll say, I've got to go to this opening, there's other ones, you know, across town, you know, you'll go to that one, I'll go to this one, we'll hit, you know, these three places we really want to, you know, touch base with.
Right.
I think for me, like, it's a more comfortable place to be a bit more behind the scenes and feels a bit more natural. And I hope that, you know, having someone who can kind of be in that role at the gallery is also helpful to what Sarah's doing. Just to kind of give a different perspective, right? That, like, you know, one person is really out in the thick of it a lot of the time, you know,
mm-hmm.
going to shows and talking to people every day and, you know, kind of doing the back and forth of all that stuff. And then we can kind of check in. I mean, we check in every morning, every night throughout the day. But really, you know, we kind of have our little moments of saying, like, okay, you know, what happened at the gallery today? What shows did we see? Who did we talk to? And I can kind of offer the perspective, not having been deeply involved in every one of those conversations,
mm-hmm.
Which I think sometimes is useful because, you know, she can go back and forth and say, well, you know, they're doing this, they're saying this, they kind of want to go this way, or, you know, someone's interested in this, but they're, you know, they're not available, et cetera. And I can sort of have a perspective that's outside of that and say, like, well, maybe we should just do this,
right.
You know, or maybe just say it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I hope that that's helpful in striking that balance. I think if we were both sort of deeply involved in the day-to-day, it might just drive us crazy.
Cause, mm-hmm.
You know, there might even be a little tug of war over, you know, who's going to do what with any given, you know, relationship.
Right.
So I think that we strike a pretty good balance there.
And yeah. Yeah.
Seemingly has been effective.
We'll yeah, see. Sure. So for NADA coming up then in December, let's talk about your strategy for survival. Being with the introvert. I actually was just listening to a woman on a radio show who's very involved in social media around introverts and has written a book as well. So I have some fresh knowledge to share with you if you want it. But what is your approach going to be? I mean, do you know about like what your length of time that you're comfortable with and then know that you need to go retreat by yourself for a little while is?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm an introverted person. You know, I mean, I know people who, you know, more or less just want to be alone, you know, 90% of the time. And I think at things like the art fairs, I feel a little differently than in my day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're going there, it's a whole event, you know, it's, you know, you're working really hard and it's long hours and it's all those things, but it's also, I really enjoy them actually, because I kind of am able to condense a lot of that social time into, you know, one chunk of, you know, basically a week.
Right.
Which to me feels great. You know, it's like, you almost don't have time at those kinds of things to really relax and have your own space. And you just kind of accept that from the get go. And sort of like when you're worn out and tired, you just kind of power through it, or, you know, you go back to the hotel and sleep and get up the next day and do it again. Where I think it's harder for me to strike a balance is when I'm not in that kind of condensed thing. And you have to balance, you know, the rest of your life with those sorts of social engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like I was even telling another artist colleague who was asking about the fairs the other day that, you know, I really enjoy them because you almost get to see all these friends and colleagues that you don't get to actually see in person often because everyone's kind of down there. I mean, Miami is really almost like an art world summer camp kind of, you know, right. It's like so many people are down there and being outside the context of New York or LA or, yeah. you know, whatever other major city you might be coming from.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like everyone's on a working vacation together.
That's nice.
So I really find it. Yeah, I think it's really nice. I mean, it's a ton of work.
Yeah.
And you come home exhausted. But yeah. like I was saying, like condensing to a period of time feels.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you're for the fair, you're able to, at least for the one you did and hopefully for the one coming up, you're able to anticipate that it's going to be a lot of work and it's going to be draining and intense. But it's also, like, as you said, it's a lot of fun because you get to socialize with your friends and whatnot. I mean, but what about that raises the socializing, presumably, that you're going to be doing with new people and, you know, and maybe people that aren't exactly your friends, but maybe your collectors or other business colleagues.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, it's always nice to see a really old friend that you haven't seen, you know, in 6 months or a year. But I think for me in general, it's usually exciting to meet new people in the art world because they're often interesting people. I mean, I don't want to say that they always are, but, you know, you're kind of down there. We'll use Miami as an example. You know, you're meeting other artists who are showing, you're meeting other galleries. Yeah, you're meeting collectors as well, and just visitors. But I think that it's such a condensed thing that so there's something about it that's really exciting to kind of just get to meet all these different people and hear, you know, well, where are you from? What are you doing? What's your program looking like? What's your work like? What are you interested in, you know, if you're a collector? And you get to kind of just have all these conversations all at once, and they all sort of relate to the same general topic, right? Because, you know, you're down there with all these other artists and galleries. So really that is the conversation of that space and that time.
Right.
So I think like you can be sort of so involved in that specific place and that specific world that really all your conversations surround almost the same thing or, you know, the same general space.
Yeah.
So something about that feels, again, like I think maybe what I was trying to get at before was that the thing that I find more difficult, I think, is the shift between those spaces, which is a kind of challenge you have when you're in New York. And, you know, I have a full-time day job too, and then, you know, we're parents and work on my own work.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot, Tyler. You're I mean, between being a parent and working full-time and co-running a gallery, I mean, you must have a lot of energy.
Yeah, I don't know where we get it from, but we seem to pull it out of the reserves.
Right.
But yeah, really what I was trying to say is that I think the sort of switch between, you know, changing from one part of the day to another, that's what I find more challenging. So yeah. When you kind of get to avoid that at the fairs.
Because right. Because you know, it's that mode all day, all night. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you though, when you're down there, I mean, and I know you probably don't have a lot of experience being down there, but do you spend some of that time going around and looking at all the work, or it sounds like it's much more socially engaged, or is it intertwined?
I think it's totally intertwined. I mean, I try and look at as much of the work as I can. You know, it's hard to balance that with working at our own, you know, booth and dealing with all the things we need to do for that.
Right.
But I think we always try and say like, okay, you know, this person gets an hour or two this morning to go, you know, try and see these few fairs or catch these few booths at the fairs. I think that I have to always try and pick out a few things that I really want to see.
Yeah.
And then, you know, see some unexpected things along the way. But if you tried to hit everything, it would be, you know, totally impossible.
Yeah. You want to put Sarah back on?
Sure.
Thanks.
Hi.
It's been forever, hasn't it? What has your experience been like? I mean, I know, again, you did the one fair, you've got one coming up, but I mean, are you totally in the zone because it is more your personality? Right.
I also, which I should mention, have worked for two pretty big art fairs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked to do one of them during the fairs last March. And my friends who have hired me in the past were very sad to hear that I would be leaving them for NADA. But I've been working in them for about 5 years, so I know what it's like already, that energy that exists between all of the gallerists and the fair coordinators and just the socialization aspect. And there's just something like in the air those weeks that are, it's really fun. It's energizing. And so doing the fair with Nada in New York was great. And yeah, totally exhausting. But I feel like those are my moments. I love them. I love how busy it is and how time flies and all the people you get to meet and new collectors you may have contacted, and mm-hmm. there's a friend you haven't seen in 15 years, and you get to show them what you're doing and talk about the artists you're working with. I mean, mm-hmm. it's great. I love doing it. So I'm looking forward to it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's great. How many times have you been to, say, Miami and or New York, for that matter?
This will be my third time in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have worked it for the March and May fairs for like since 2012 or 13, so a while. So I haven't participated in them until recently. So it's been nice to go from one side of the art fair in the production side of things and assisting exhibitors to becoming one of those exhibitors. It's been a nice little change in my life personally.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah. And it's, and when you're working with an organization like NADA, that's so professional and things are really run quite well and organized. It's nice to kind of reap those benefits as the exhibitor. Whereas I've been always the one who had been trying to accommodate our exhibitors and doing the best job that I could, and now it's nice to be taken care of. So it feels good. It feels like a little bit of an accomplishment.
Right. You mentioned a while back when you mentioned that you're going to NADA Miami that they have I can't remember the phrasing you used, but something like a lower priced booth. That's one of the options.
Yeah.
So what is your approach as far as needing to break even, you know, knowing that it ultimately, even if you don't sell anything or much, that it's going to be a good investment in the long run, that kind of, philosophical take on participating?
Well, you know, when we started doing Mrs., we always knew we wanted to participate in fairs, and we did want to specifically participate in NADA. We just felt like it was a really good fit for our structure of working. And so that's kind of always been in the back of our minds when we're working on things. And so we have only applied for the small booths, and we are reaping that benefit because you do have a smaller amount of space that you're able to display your artwork in, but that also gives us some kind of fun challenges with the artists that we get to work with. So we get to just do a really concentrated presentation. So right now we'd like to break even, but it's a low risk in many regards because the booth cost itself is relatively low, and we found really economical housing down in Miami. We got an Airbnb we're happy about.
How early does one have to get an Airbnb during Miami Basel
to
get
hope
a reservation?
You already booked.
When did you do it?
We got our acceptance, and I booked within a week because we knew we were coming.
Are you talking about last year or within a week that you were in NADA? You mean
when we got our acceptance letter? I don't even know when it was.
Summer.
A while ago.
Mm-hmm.
August, maybe August or
okay.
early September.
Right.
We booked immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because even the week that I waited, I was watching things just like drop, you know, many places weren't available anymore.
Right.
So, and we found really, really cheap flights. So right now we're mostly just excited to go down because
mm-hmm.
we're really not spending a lot of money. I think the risks and the costs, I obviously as the costs increase, the risks increase with the artwork that you bring and decide to do art fairs at. And I think everybody needs to be really strategic about that. And I know that lots and lots of galleries are, and I know that the costs associated can just become exorbitant. So we try and keep it on a budget. We do want to keep things, you know, tight.
Good.
And that's also, but we also have to consider the price point that our artists' works are. You know, the majority of the artists that we work with are emerging artists, and their works just aren't, they're just not that expensive, which is good and bad. It's good because we do end up reaching a wide variety of emerging collectors, and it's also affordable works for larger collectors and have more serious, you know, they have more serious collections. But it's nice because then our artists who aren't used to making any money and we get to sell their artwork are, you know, now they're compensated for it. So it works out well for them and we're able to sell more. But that, you know, the downside is that we aren't making as much money as we could be to be paying for a fair booth, because those fees go up a lot as soon as you start looking at bigger booths. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to really consider what the amount of work is going to bring to the fair. So, you know what I mean? So it's a game. It's definitely a game. And there's lots of galleries that are bowing out of doing our fairs completely. And I don't blame them. I understand it's tough. So, and it's competitive too. So we're happy that we're doing these small project booths, but there's no guarantee in the future we'll be able to, you know, get a bigger booth or we'll be able to stay at the size that we're right now leasing. So,
yeah.
So right. we're gonna try and do our best while we're there and just hope that we can continue to do it. Cause it is a real benefit for us and it has really all so far worked out really great. And we'd like to continue to do that because it does bring a good amount of exposure that we just aren't able to facilitate here in Maspeth, Queens.
Sure.
Even though we're close, we're right in New York City. It's we still just can't reach the wide audience that these fairs just, you know, they just give you. It's right there. That's why people are doing them. So.
Mm-hmm. Even though you've only done the one NADA last spring. Have you thought about it in terms of, you know, the traffic, especially it's probably going to be even greater, I would guess, down in Miami, but have you thought about, you know, the traffic that I will get in the 4 or 5 days of doing NADA equals about X number of months traffic in the gallery in Maspeth? You ever thought about that?
Well, definitely, definitely for sure. I mean, we do have a really good online presence and I think I see more and more, people buying work off of the internet, completely sight unseen, which is so foreign to me, but I totally understand it. We've been doing a lot of sales online, ourselves and off of just imagery. So, yes, but we are, our opening events do have like really high attendance, which is great. And we try and have at least one event throughout our exhibitions to bring more traffic in.
Mm-hmm.
So our exhibitions are getting really good visibility, in many different ways, but yes, the amount of traffic and the sheer eyes that you get from just doing an art fair is just, it's like unsurmountable. You can't even, there's no way, even if I was in Chelsea, I would be able to get that exposure, you know?
Right.
So,
right. So it's like off the charts compared to what you get in the gallery itself.
Yeah. And I think that's true for even when I did work in Chelsea, but, you know, we'd have lots of visitors on day to day, but you know, the art fairs were always the big hitters, you know, that's where you made the connection. So.
Sure. And then you mentioned the internet sales that you yourself have had. Were you able to find out, were you able to find out in those cases, what is the profile? I mean, maybe I'm sure it's a case by case basis, but if you were able to categorize it or, you know, sort of come up with a profile, what is the general profile of somebody who has bought some of your artist's work just virtually?
You know, so believe it or not, we have a lot of our collectors are based in California and I've never lived in California and Tyler has never lived in California.
Mm-hmm.
I think collectors are becoming very interested in the way that social media and I think I'm interested in it too, really, and specifically Instagram has really opened some new doors into art collecting and ways of art viewing. And so I think that there's a number of very smart collectors out there who, you know, kind of navigate through and click and go through Instagram, and they have been finding smaller galleries such as ourselves that are showing different artists that are out in California, and they want to participate in the New York scene. And they're finding it easy to work with us, which has been fantastic. And I had no expectation of actually meeting collectors on Instagram when I first started this, but we do find a lot of our collectors are finding us through that platform. That being said, you know, all press is good press, right? So mm-hmm. Even when we have people visiting, we have a lot of people posting, and a lot of our artists post on their walls regularly, or their Instagrams regularly. And so it's kind of just become this like internet web where, and then that leads us to our website, or there's an article that comes out and somebody posts about it on Instagram. But it's really, you know, that network that I spoke about earlier is not just, you know, physical interactions. A lot of it is virtual interactions. And I mean, that's not just the way of the art world. It's the way of a lot of the way things are working now. But I don't see that as a negative. I think of it as a way that things are opening up and allowing for smaller spaces that are run by only, you know, 1 to 3 people are able to function and able to reach out and connect to places that we wouldn't necessarily be able to 10 years ago. And we're benefiting from it, and we're going to just kind of ride that wave and see if it keeps working out. And if mm-hmm. it doesn't, then we'll reorganize and think about strategies some more. But, you know, it's really been a beneficial situation. And we have great documentation of our shows. We try and do the best that we can in that regard, because we do know that a lot of people are viewing the work virtually. And mm-hmm. I think that's just because I'm also looking at other galleries and other ways, you know, other artists that are maybe in LA or maybe in Berlin. And I'm not sure when I'm going to get there, if ever, but I want to know, and I think that people are doing the same thing for us.
Where in California are these collectors, or is it one that in particular that you're thinking of?
There's a few actually. Uh-huh. We've just one's in Hollywood, and we've been talking for about a year. He's been great. We have another woman in Oakland, and then we have another person in Santa Barbara. They're kind of like wow. scattered all over a little bit, but mm-hmm. God, I love California. So sunny.
Yeah, I'm gonna contact the Chamber of Commerce and let them know you're available on retainer.
Yeah, sure. I've not even really spent that much time in California, but yeah. I would like to more.
So how about this? I'm interested to know how cognizant you are of your. I mean, maybe you're no different than all of us. But I'm just curious if you feel like you are plugged in maybe a higher percentage of time even than most in terms of your connectivity, you know, and whatnot. I mean, I just mentioned it because between, you know, the doing the emails at all hours and, you know, and obviously you as all gallery people spend time on social media, which is part of the business. But you specifically, how would you say... Do you feel like you're plugged in a healthy amount of time, or maybe somewhere beyond that?
I mean, maybe we should really refer to Tyler's opinion on this.
Right.
he's got to live with me.
Right.
I don't know. I do try and have breaks, but I'm not good at it. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I'm a little bit of a mama bear, and I'm kind of all over it all the time. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm probably plugged in more than I should be. Would you like Tyler's opinion though?
Yeah. But before you pass the phone over to Tyler, it's more of an abstract kind of question because obviously I and people listening aren't hearing anything that makes us say, oh man, she needs to like get offline a little bit more, you know, take some downtime. But there's no evidence of that. I mean, you seem, you know, and maybe you're good at hiding it, but you seem well adjusted and content. So there wouldn't be any cause for alarm. But I just, it's just something that I, and I'm, I hope a lot of people listening are thinking about more. How much is too much? And, you know, certainly, I mean, from speaking from my own experience, I'm not somebody who's especially connected, but I certainly have a smartphone and use it. And I certainly have noticed, particularly in thinking about it in terms of some things I've heard about in social science conversations about the subject, that when I'm in my downtime moments or in my non-plugged in moments, that I observe, like maybe when I'm reading a book, that maybe my attention span is not maybe at its peak performance.
Right. Well, I mean, I very much recently had to kind of make some boundaries for myself. One of those is I'm no longer writing emails on Sunday. That seems like an easy thing to do.
That's
but
good.
For me, it's not, I mean, that's kind of a big step back for me. I also try not to make any appointments. I was doing a lot of appointments on Monday and Sunday when we were closed because, you know, a lot of people in the arts industry are really great and they want to come visit us, and they only have Sunday and Mondays off also. So
right.
I'm trying to reserve those for only Mondays now, and so that I have a full day on Sunday where I'm hanging out with my family. Inevitably, I have to come to the gallery and do something on Sundays, of course. Mm-hmm. Like this Sunday, Tyler and I had to come in and mop the floor. but at least we did it together. I've been really trying to set some more boundaries for myself, but I'm not good at it. I've been always a bit of a workaholic, and nothing has changed as I've gotten a little bit older. So, I think it's important to have a live work balance.
Sure.
We do close the gallery at 5. So 3 days out of the week, I pick my daughter up at school, which is important. And
yeah.
I try to be home at night as often as possible, even though I do have a lot of, you know, engagements, which usually don't even go out that late. It's just a matter of like wanting to be home to put my daughter to sleep, which is pretty important. So, and it's also important to have a career. So, I've been trying to do better about that. But it's hard, you know?
That's, you know, what's also what you said earlier, having friends who are working at galleries who have the same hours as you, and so they're not able to come out and see your shows. That's got to be really frustrating. I mean, would they ever just take an hour and a half lunch, you know, maybe, and come out? Or is that just like
intense? People do try and come out, and sometimes it's just totally impossible. Chelsea's really far away.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at it on a map, it's like a matter of miles. But when you're here, it sometimes takes you, sometimes for me to get from here to Chelsea to go to an opening, I don't even get there till like 6:30, and I leave. It takes me like an hour and a half. So,
sure.
Yeah. So sometimes it is really complicated, and but you know, and I do want everybody to be able to come to see the shows. So I try and be as accommodating as possible. But no more Sundays. It's just a hard no for me. So
good for you.
That's my one. Let's see how long it lasts. Let's see.
All right. You want to put Tyler on?
Sure.
Hey.
So Tyler, what's your take on all that? I mean, the Sunday Sabbath, as it were, seems like a pretty good thing, but does it bug you a bit sometimes how much she's plugged in?
I mean, you know, I have tiny moments where I'll take it personally. But generally it's more sort of out of concern for her mental well-being.
Yeah.
Justin, you know, I sort of know it myself because I, for, you know, 10 something years was a freelance worker. So having done that kind of lifestyle, you kind of learn that you have to set your own boundaries because no one else is going to set them for you. And if you don't, really, you could work 24 hours a day and still be behind.
Sure.
I try and frame it as a discussion with Sarah more as saying like, you have to take a break because it will actually help you like be more effective. You know, like you're not really getting anything done if you're trying to write emails at, you know, 11:30 at night. Like it's kind of those kind of things where you keep working, but you're really not accomplishing anything, or it's really the wrong time to be doing that type of work anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the Sunday things help. I mean, we're both workaholics. You sort of mentioned it before when we were just kind of running through what we each have on our plates.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably enable each other as well, as much as we help.
Right.
But I think she's probably gotten a little bit better at it as it shakes out. Yeah.
But to be fair, I mean, just as you describe, you know, you both being workaholics and describing what the two of you have, I mean, that's in New York, that's got to be incredibly typical, you know, a two working couple with a child working those kinds of hours. I mean, I would imagine is quite common. So the question is, do you just say to yourself, you know, I mean, this is just the way it is in cosmopolitan life in the, you know, 2017, or to what extent do you just ignore what the norm is and say, this is an uncomfortable level of workaholicness?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think it's totally true. I mean, I think everybody we know works too much and feels like they're not doing enough. That's sort of like the New York mentality, right? Like,
right.
Like I'm busy all the time, but
right.
I'm so behind.
Yeah.
I think for me, my own work and for both of us, the gallery and, you know, our being parents, you know, like these are all really important, but I think like our careers are really important to us too.
Yeah.
And keeping those as like a central part of our lives is important also as an aspect of our parenting, I think, you know. Saying like that, you know, you should do what matters to you, and that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there definitely are times when we have to figure out how to draw lines, you know, and we'll both sort of sit down and say, you know, we're pushing this too hard, you know, we're not going to stop doing everything tomorrow, but, you know, we should find a way to make this aspect better, you know, and that can be small things or something like Sarah's saying she's going to, you know, take off Sundays, that kind of stuff.
Clearly, you guys have a very high level of collaboration in personal and professional lives, so there's no question that you guys just have really amenable personalities, you know, really matching personalities for each other, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I think we strike a really good balance. I mean, you know, you get at it with what we were talking before about being, you know, Sarah being more overtly social and me maybe less so, like those kinds of things. I feel like we generally balance out really well,
yeah.
Which is helpful both in personal and business.
Yeah. You want to put Sarah back on?
Sure.
Thanks.
Hi.
Hi. So I'm not sure if there's anything else in particular that I want to ask. I was kind of thinking, just to be in sort of transparent, I was thinking about like trying to ask you about what your biggest challenges are running the gallery. I kind of feel like we've sort of inadvertently covered that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you just want to say about generally or specifically about being a young gallery and that we haven't covered?
I don't know. I mean, we're just so thankful that we're able to do this, honestly.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's really important, by the way. And sorry to interrupt, but I think you having that perspective, and I imagine that it comes from having, you know, worked at a gallery for several years and for art fairs, and now being able to run the show yourself, that you probably have that appreciation. Is that fair?
Oh yeah, no, I couldn't be, and I also get to work with artists I want to work with. I mean, come on. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like super dream. And I couldn't be more thankful for them to even want to work with us. You know, it's great. It's been so nice, and kind of to even get to the 1 year mark has felt like a huge achievement. So we're just both really thankful, honestly, and it's been so good, and I just hope that we'll continue to be able to do this and do a good job for the artists we work for.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Sarah and Tyler, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Of course, thank
so
you.
Much. Thanks for inviting us to be a part of this platform. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're out. Thank you so much again to Sarah and Tyler for talking to me. It was lovely speaking with them. If I were a collector, I'd want to work with gallerists like that, wouldn't you? If you don't already? Absolutely. Before I tell you about the t-shirt design idea in just a second, and as well as the Art World's sex harassment scandal and the Sackler story. I wanted to remind you that this is a listener-supported show. Most importantly, I guess, if you guys like this show, I hope that you will be so kind as to spread the word about it. There are more art podcasts out there every day, it seems. And meanwhile, there have been some stricter algorithmic laws laid down against downloads. So in other words, the number of downloads that I've been showing through my podcast host has been going down over the last few months. All that to say, if you like the show, please spread the word. It's very much appreciated that you are getting more people turned on to it if you are a fan and like listening. Also, we do rely on listener donations to keep the show going. You can support the show financially via either Patreon, supporting the show monthly with us for as little as a dollar a month, or PayPal. You can make a one-time donation. If you make a donation of $3 or more a month on Patreon, $25 or more one time on PayPal, you will get bonus episodes and never-ending love from me. You can support the show non-financially as well by becoming a fan on social media at Artist Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also leave a nice review on the various platforms that we're on, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. And if you want us to be on another platform, let me know. All right, so Patrick offered to have custom t-shirts made for the show to raise a little money. He has done it with the students that he works with in the past and has gotten quite good at it. So his idea, which I thought was pretty clever, is the P word, which for those of you not familiar, I've banned the word practice, as in art practice, from the show. So he came up with PR and then the sort of expletive symbols, you know, at symbol, ampersand, hashtag, exclamation point, and then CE. So the middle section of the P word is blotted out with expletive symbols. I thought that would be pretty cool. Or maybe another version of it would be ask me about my PR expletive CE. How does that sound? I'm open to your ideas. I would love to hear from you what you would be willing to donate to the show to get a t-shirt, even if it's something as simple as the logo of the podcast, the Conversation Art Podcast, you know, hosted by Michael Shaw, or just the Conversation Art Podcast. Very simple, on a black or gray background, you know. It's a pretty nice logo. I think you've seen it on the website. So those are a couple of ideas. I'd be open to yours. Like, if you could design this t-shirt for the podcast, what would it be? And would it be something that you would then donate, I don't know, $18 to $20, you know, and you get a t-shirt? I'm not sure if that's lowballing it, but somewhere in that neighborhood, and if you would get one. So do us a favor, do me a favor, please, and just shoot a quick email or send a note over Instagram or Twitter saying I'd get a t-shirt if it was this. I'll try to put that P word thing on the website along with this episode's notes to remind you. So do let us know, please. All right, so news update number one, which you may have heard about, it is about the now former publisher of Art Forum. And I first learned about this through former guest Jeff Weiss, who does Weisslink, an email that he sends out every night of the week. The first piece that he quoted was from ArtNet on October 24th, is the day that he included this in his link. Art Forum publisher Knight Landesman accused of sexual misconduct. Immediately below that, nice little chain here, he quoted Art Forum. Art Forum responds to misconduct complaint. And then below that, there are a couple of pieces that are excerpted about Terry Richardson, the photographer slash fashion photographer, who, as the Times UK put it, a renowned photographer who has been the subject of widespread allegations of sexually abusing models over many years, is still lauded by many in the industry despite gaining a reputation as the Harvey Weinstein of fashion. So we've got the Harvey Weinstein of fashion now with Knight Landesman. We have the Harvey Weinstein of the art world. goes on the 27th of October, Weisslink excerpted career advice, then overture, more women detail allegations against Knight Lantzman, as well as art form editor-in-chief Michelle Kuo resigns. And then on the 29th, just a couple of days after that, we have Art Forum staff condemns magazine's management of allegations. And then in another excerpt, Art Forum staff breaks ranks with publishers in letter condemning magazine's management. And then Art Forum editor-in-chief Michelle Kuo on why she resigned in Art News. That's by former guest Andrew Russeth. So we've got a lot of alums involved in covering this. And I don't need to get into the details if you're not aware of it. The gist of it is that Knight Lantzman was very grabby with the premise that he was just being flirtatious. But of course, he was being much more than that. That's sort of the short version of it with a lot of women. And I think he manipulated women who wanted to get published in the magazine or get known as artists in the offices as well. So that's the gist of it. And my first awareness of him, because I was unaware of him until I listened to the audiobook of Sarah Thornton, another former guest, 7 Days in the Art World. One of the chapters was about Art Forum. And I just remember him as being this shortish guy who wore very flamboyant suits, you know, dapper kind of guy who was always visible at the art fairs. And then when I was talking to somebody about it, I kind of remembered, oh yeah, maybe I do remember reading something about him being a little touchy or aggressive, even with the writer Sarah Thornton. So I wouldn't say it's all coming back to me, but it doesn't hugely surprise me, I guess. So there's that story. And then I also wanted to bring to your attention something you may not be familiar with, as opposed to Knight Lantzman, which is this story that is broken in a couple of places. I'm actually reading right now one of the two big stories. The one in The New Yorker is called The Family That Built an Empire of Pain. And the other one, which I have not read, which is in Esquire by Christopher Glazek, is called The Secretive Family Making Billions from the Opioid Crisis. So just to give you the whole takeaway from all of this, essentially this family, the Sacklers, they have basically, I'm going to read an excerpt so I don't misrepresent it, but the gist of it is that this family has become very wealthy through the widespread abuse and use of OxyContin. So I'm going to just read from a little bit of our old friend Tim Schneider, very popular recent guest, whose recent piece in the gray in ArtNet News of his Gray Market, the Gray Market column, talks a little bit about this via the Esquire article. And I'm just going to read you a little bit of it. He writes, "This week, questioning alternative aspects of three art industry scandals. Just Say No. On Monday, Christopher Glazek guided readers on an investigative deep dive into arguably the most private and prolific museum patrons in the U.S. and the U.K., the Sacklers. The family name currently graces courtyards, wings, and galleries of prestigious institutions that include the Met, the V&A, the Louvre, the Royal Academy, and the Smithsonian, among an almost comically long list of others. But as Glazek's story reveals in stomach-churning detail, the Sackler clan has been infinitely more interested in broadcasting its name than its history, and least of all the primary source of its billions. That source is OxyContin, the time-release prescription painkiller central to the American opioid epidemic, which a federal commission recently blamed for about 142 deaths per day, or September 11th every 3 weeks, quote unquote." I'm just going to read one more from this, which is a quote that Tim quotes in his piece. "As Arthur's fortune grew, he turned his acquisitive instincts to the art market, quickly amassing the world's largest private collection of ancient Chinese artifacts. According to a memoir by Marietta Lutz, his second wife, Collecting soon became a mania that took over his life. Under an avalanche of ritual bronzes and weapons, mirrors and ceramics, inscribed bones and archaic jades, their lives were, quote, often in chaos. Lutz wrote, "Addiction is a curse, be it drugs, women, or collecting." So there you go. You can read, of course, the finer points about this whole story in that New Yorker or Esquire piece. It's just good stuff to read, good stuff to be aware of, as depressing as it may be, and infuriating, like as if we need another infuriating thing to read about. But I did think it was worth mentioning, wanted to bring it to your attention, and I'll leave it at that for this week. So do let me know what you think about a t-shirt design. If there is a little bit of interest, you know, maybe even five people, I'll be in touch with Patrick and we'll get something going. So do please reach out about that. I would very much appreciate it if you could provide a little bit of feedback and insight into what you would want on a t-shirt and if you would go for it. And otherwise, I look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much for listening. I will talk to you then. Ciao for now.